Hi, this is Justin Trudeau. You're listening to CFIU 93.3 Guelph Campus Radio.
Everybody, welcome to this special online-only podcast version of Open Sources Guelph, not on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio, but I am still your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Still Scotty Hertz, still giving her, still for all of people kind.
So. Oh, I wish...
Whether on the internet... Or on the airwaves. Although this may find its way to regular broadcast, actually. It seems to happen with our stuff, our content, as they say.
Yeah,
everything's content.
We don't get no say.
They're just going to play it 10 times. We'll be like, I heard your thing. It's a beatboxing. That's our next thing.
It's too bad we're not talking about people kind. Anyway, we are going to talk about some stuff. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us typically on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online on CFRU.ca, but you are listening to us now on the podcast channel. That is the Guelph Politicast podcast channel. It's available through Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And we are here today because we are being preempted for... the Black History Month programming on CFRU, which I believe is airing all week long. So, unfortunately, we do want to give proper airtime to different voices and things.
Absolutely.
So, we are fortunate enough that we have a well-established and well-worn podcast channel that we can take a minute and take a half hour, as it were, to do a shorter version of the show.
This may be the first time we've done podcast only.
Podcast
exclusive.
Only, yeah.
It's called exclusive.
Nice.
Everybody will listen.
It's an exclusive. So today, in our shortened edition, we're going to talk about the epic political slap fight on the left coast between the BC and Alberta NDP governments over oil. How dirty will the fight get, and can Justin Trudeau stay above it all? And first of all, though, we are going to talk about what's going on with the PC leadership race. It was when Brad was on the show this time last week, we just got the announcement that Christine Elliott and Carolyn Mulroney were officially hopping in. And they have so hopped, joining Doug Ford, and I think these are going to be the three. These are the three to choose from.
It's looking that way, because I guess time's a-wasting if anybody wants to jump into the race at this point. And I suppose I should watch what I say about Doug Ford, because he follows me on Twitter now, it seems, or at least
he's following me. I don't know if
bot
he still is.
Does or something.
Yeah.
So.
I'm
not going to watch what I say because I'll say the same stuff. But so an interesting three candidates have shook loose. Doug Ford, of course, doing his announcement. You probably talked about it mom's basement.
The mom's basement
which
announcement.
Was
oh yeah,
cute yet somehow. It was just something about it.
It was very lo-fi.
Because who knows what's going on in the basement?
Straight up, Doug Ford.
Style. As you know, folks, the elites are going to raise your taxes and wreck everything,
folks.
So have you seen that website that's all just
folks, yeah.
Oh, folks.ca, people, yeah. For a laugh. So Doug Ford is very serious about being the leader. However, it seems that he's not being taken very seriously in certain circles. But he may be. You know, I'm not actually sure at this point who the one to watch is. Caroline, zero experience, Mulroney. I mean, she does have some experience. She's worn the badge. She's been on the convention floor. I think as a young man, when I had a crush, political crush on her, we're almost the same age. She was by her father's side, I suppose, learning the ropes. She did say she's the only candidate for change, but man, she's the only candidate that's really like the exact same thing that conservatives have been
railing
for the
against,
longest
yeah.
time, right?
I mean, that's the paradox. I think I said something on Twitter. It's like, the two complaints have been leveled against the last two federal liberal leaders. She covers them both, which is the just visiting, which was what they tagged Ignatieff with, and the not ready for the jobs, which was what they tagged Trudeau with. I don't want to. I almost don't want to get into that.
That's fine. Me neither, because we know.
I mean,
we know where she's coming from.
But these are like these are unique circumstances, and. Andrew Cohen on his Ottawa Citizen column, I think he covered this very well in terms of pointing out the fact that, you know, sometimes you get leaders who kind of walk into the job and all of a sudden are, you know, premiers or prime ministers. It's been known to happen.
Yeah.
And not just like south of the border where, you know, certain people, their first time at bat,
yeah,
get the top job. I think he did say something interesting, though, that she's heard the voice of destiny that sons and daughters of privileged men do.
Yeah.
Which kind of sums it up for me. Whether or not she...
Like, she seems intelligent, well-spoken, sure, all of that stuff, but zero. Like,
but she was on this literally track, though. That, like, oh, his yeah point was she was on this track.
Well, I think, like, the idea was you win the seat, the right safe seat. Where was it? York or somewhere.
Yeah, safe seat.
You hang around for a while, and then maybe you go.
You get into cabinet.
Even Obama was like a senator before.
He was a senator, yeah.
One-termer.
Yeah, he was a first-term senator. And I guess he was also someone who heard the voice of destiny, yeah, too. But my question with Carolyn Mulroney is, like, how is one of the biggest private media organization in Canada going to handle this? If she, I mean, first of all, if she's a candidate, second of all, if she becomes the opposition leader and the head of the PCs, because first thing Monday morning, which was her official launch, she was on CP24,
mm-hmm,
and then she was on CTV News Channel.
Doing the rounds.
But who works at CTV as one of their main, yes, national anchors of the morning show? Her brother. And I find this exceptionally problematic. And if he was just the e-talk host, I would let it slide.
Right.
If he's just doing the infotainment stuff, I would let it slide. But he is on a national news program 5 days a week, and he's been doing sit-down interviews with, like, real newsmakers and not Kardashians. He's done interviews with Prime Minister Trudeau,
mm-hmm,
Tim Cook, Apple CEO, and lots of others. So this is like really icky territory.
Well, it'll be okay till the paths cross, so... And any of the candidates, if you're listening, we will have you on. We're not related. So come on
down.
I'm
not so sure. I'm not so sure because he is a prominent, yeah, face on the network. And she was on both of the news channels, both of the Bell Media news channels, first thing Monday morning, given prominent placement in the morning, like 8, 9 a.m. Yeah, hour shifts. She was there. And you can't tell me she's not getting...
Special preferential
treatment, because little brother is there doing his, like, eat talk in your morning.
Yeah. I don't watch.
I don't watch either.
I'm a working guy, but yeah. It still
bugs me because...
No, I understandably so.
Because I feel like she's being given something of a threat, especially since I feel like also Christine Elliott is getting a short shrift here. If you're watching the media attention, it seems like a Doug Ford versus Carolyn Mulroney thing. And Christine Elliott seems to be in the back seat, which is odd because given the extenuating circumstances, given the fact that she is an experienced cabinet minister and MPP, given the fact that she was the runner-up the last time,
mm-hmm,
I think she'd be more of the foregone conclusion.
Yeah, and I think if there is an establishment candidate, let's say, and the media would like you to think that it's Carolyn Mulroney, but I think it's actually Christine Elliott.
Sure.
Somebody with experience is like... 5, 6, 7, 8 years of experience.
I think she was 9.
Ran for the job a couple times.
Yeah.
Top job. I can't believe she came second to, well, not just Hudak, but Frank Cleese as well. Like, I just, anyway, that's ancient history now. I guess that was almost 10 years ago, right? 2009 probably. So, yeah. But she was actually the deputy leader at one point.
Sure.
Which is going to, I would think if they're worth their salt at the party level, then they would consider all of these things rather than a star candidate who, like Carolyn Mulroney, or a star in other ways like Doug Ford. They're both known, let's say. If you grab average Canadians, said these three people, who do you know? It's like, well, Carolyn Mulroney, of course, probably. Doug Ford, absolutely. Christine Elliott, who's, I might, maybe, yeah. And then... Of course, they always refer to Jim Flaherty. Oh, that's Jim Flaherty's wife. Where, right. When in actual fact, she is the one with experience. Like they say, Carolyn Mulroney is Brian Mulroney's daughter with zero experience. Whereas Christine Elliott was an actual seated MPP. I mean, that's big.
And she has been endorsed by a friend of the show, Michael Harris, up in Kitchener. He endorsed her today.
Well, the other Michael Harris. Not iPolitics Harris. Michael Harris.
No.
There's so many Michael Harrises. Can you guys change your names?
MPP Michael Harris.
You guys change your names, please. Yeah, the endorsement's Fast and Furious. And I guess after the fall of Patrick Brown, I believe some of his workers went to Mulroney for sure. I'm not sure about the other two. Mm-hmm. And isn't one of them working with Vic Fedeli, right? Anyway, yes. they all defected really quickly. They all found jobs really quickly because there's jobs in them hills for the PC.
Well, I mean, they were also like experienced campaign people, so of course they're gonna like you want the they're seasoned. Not gonna
yeah, it's
they're not gonna let those people sit on the bench for an important election.
It's too late to have the rookies at the wheel.
Right.
Although yeah, it
was although there might be a rookie digging the wheel.
It's June 7th, it's not that far away.
The election, no, and yeah, the leadership like, is on March 10th, and I think that if you're buying memberships and to the party in order to vote for the leader, I think that expires next week.
And I saw some talk today that the membership numbers that Brown was claiming of something like 200,000 might have been inflated.
Yeah.
And they found an Excel spreadsheet somewhere with a bunch of people's names and they're not even sure if they're members.
This is a fascinating story.
Big Bird at 123 Sesame Street, right. Maybe, or whatever. Who knows?
This is a fascinating story because they've talked about finding like applications, like written applications that weren't processed.
Yeah.
And... Missing files. It's the podcast. Nobody cares. It's the missing files that had never been processed or were like on like separate spreadsheets and like separate Excel files and all this. That it seemed like the housekeeping of the membership was like a really wasn't done terribly well. So,
which is going to be cleaned up. Everybody's going to
clean
up. But
they're like down 64,000 members. But like it was a couple of months ago. Patrick Brown was like tanking like. Touting, you know, we've gotten like 214,000 members, and you know, we're going.
That's a lot of members. That's a lot.
Sure, yeah. Especially
most parties don't run on that kind of numbers, right?
No, but I mean, it adds to the concerns about what all Patrick Brown was doing. It's funny now, people talking about what you know, Patrick Brown, how the elites forced him out and. And then it's funny how you have Doug Ford, who's kind of raging against the elites and you know installing people like Christine Elliott and Carolyn Mulroney. And so it's like, whose side are the elites on?
Choose your side, elites.
Right, because Patrick Brown was never the elite candidate of last time. That was Christine Elliott. And this is the weird thing. It's like the last two have been kind of upsets. You had Hudak, who was coming in from the Mike Harris common sense revolution side of the things. Then you had Patrick Brown, who's coming in from the federal kind of social conservative side of things. And that's kind of who he kind of riled up to take that nomination, like Monty McNaughton, who I think is now gone to Doug Ford territory because Doug Ford's talking about like,
sounds about right.
Getting rid of the carbon tax, which Ontario doesn't have. We have cap and trade. And getting rid of the sex ed. Get rid of that sex ed. But yeah, it's I'm sure the Guelph nominee for the Liberals will have something to say about that.
Yes, and that's the the current news.
Yes,
that most people are aware of all politics in town. Sly Castaldi, from best known as the executive director of Women in Crisis, and I think won Queen's Jubilee Award or like a decorated person and known in the
community.
She's
highly decorated.
And you would know it just to see Sly Castaldi because everywhere, you know. Everything from Snap, Guelph, whatever, you'd be like, oh, hey, it's them.
Yeah.
So interesting choice. And from the, I would say, activist community?
Oh, yeah, I would.
Is it fair to say that? Probably,
I think so.
Right? Yeah, because, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's going to be an interesting choice. So, you know, we have two kind of confirmed candidates now with Mike Schreiner. Who, you know, I was at that convention on Saturday and people are fired up. Greens,
they seem to be. I saw a little bit of
very
the coverage there.
It
was, yeah.
And quite ready. And I think they do sense opportunity here.
It's pretty much a full house there. Or?
Yeah, it's pretty full.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The speech was full. I guess it was kind of like mandatory viewing,
yes.
But, you know, his keynote was
you must
very
attend.
Well. Very well attended. A little bit of inside baseball. It was funny because I was there like kind of early for the speech. So I was like sitting in the back ready to like make notes and cover the speech. And then, so the members start coming in and Ralph Ben-Murgy, who's the comms director for the Green Party of Ontario, was like, everybody fill up the seats at the front first. And he was like, everybody, like people were coming in, like sitting where they want. And he's like, no, up front, first.
Yes,
like I'm kind of making him a bit more like Skeletor in these. But
the room ended up being full.
The room ended up being full. You know, it was standing room only in the end. So it was kind of funny to, up front.
Wasn't certain how many people were going to be there, but obviously a fully loaded and lots of momentum there.
Yes.
And I guess the other parties still need to find the momentum. We haven't heard very much of the Conservatives and the NDP in time.
Well, there was a post on the Guelph Humber post that said that the PCs...
Guelph Humber. Oh, really?
Yes.
Of all places. No, sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
But they said that... I haven't seen this anywhere else, so I'm not sure how real it is, but talking about getting Christine Elliott to run here, which would be
like parachute candidate.
Well, it would be bizarre because we're on like the exact opposite side of Toronto from where she ran in Whitby, Oshawa.
Parachutists don't do well here.
Yes, and
some advice, Conservatives.
But there's also that is like they would be running against a very high profile, community involved Liberal candidate.
Yep.
Plus a highly involved community minded Green Party leader. Who has already been acclaimed and has been like kind of laying the groundwork for his campaign for if not the last year, for the last several years.
Can she not run out her way, Whitby Ajax, or is that not a safe seat?
I think a Conservative still sits there, but I'd be curious.
It's sliding in for a nomination that isn't filled yet, probably, right?
Right.
Because there's enough trouble on that front as it is, I think, by the sound.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I did want to draw attention to our neighbors next door, Cambridge, because there was an article on the record. Tanya Kahatra, I think that's right, Kahatra, who's a dentist from Calgary, is the candidate for Cambridge North Dumfries.
Now that's a parachute.
Running, well... not yet, because apparently she hasn't yet made the move to Cambridge, and there are some people concerned there if she's, you know, what's her status? She's like serious about running.
Cambridge is like us; the knowns do.
But they're also, I mean, it's Cambridge should be a relatively easy seat, because a Conservative has sat there recently in both federal and provincially. Catherine McGarry, friend of the show, won it last time. She's a cabinet minister now. She's now she was Minister of Forestries and Natural Resources,
yes,
but now she's Minister of Transportation, which is highly centric to Cambridge's concerns now.
It's running again.
And she is running again, so. But I mean, Cambridge wants all day go.
Yeah.
Cambridge wants...
high-speed train like us?
I don't think they get the high-speed train, but they also want to be part of the whole ION network. And they're kind of struggling where to lay out that path now.
Right.
But the Minister of Transportation would be key to that. And if the Minister of Transportation is also your MPP, right? So
it's strategic cabinet choosing there. Right?
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's all strategic at this point. But
yeah.
It's interesting that they're kind of screwing the pooch here, where they kind of, random Calgary dentist lady.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. Okay.
But they have a practice in Cambridge? What's the Cambridge connection? They have a flat in Cambridge? Like, is there any link? Do you know where Cambridge is, candidate?
Tanya Kahatra.
No idea. Like, I could see if there was a link, even if it was a tenuous one.
She
like,
describes
my auntie
herself
lives
as
there.
An investor dentist. I'm not sure what
an
that means.
An investor dentist? What is that? Sorry. An investor was like a control manager or whatever.
We can talk about that all day.
Oh boy.
Cut.
We will try and get her on the show though. Folks, we will.
Are we?
Well, why not?
All
Mary,
right.
Running. She can tell us what an investor dentist
when
is.
When do we run out of people in
gold
golf to
teeth
talk to?
As opposed to lead in
oh,
your teeth?
Oh man.
I don't know, something.
Okay. our second topic is this debate about the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline. Of course, this was approved in 2016 by the feds. the green-minded pro-environmental liberal feds. And it seemed like we were good to go, although there are a number of legal actions from about a dozen different parties kind of outstanding now, including the city of Vancouver, the city of Burnaby, First Nations, several environmental groups. And now the new NDP government of BC, John Horgan, says that they're going to introduce legislation that, to stop any further pipeline development until they can find out what the consequence of bitumen spilling will be. This did not make Rachel Notley happy. She is moving forward, wants to move forward, obviously, with Trans Mountain, jobs, and now it seems like the counteraction is to ban BC wine from Alberta.
Yeah, this is getting really interesting and nasty. And I mean, not really sure how long it can go on. What's most interesting about it is they're essentially, the NDP are the only party in the country where if you join to the province, you're a federal member.
Yeah.
If you join the federal level, you automatically become a member of provincial. Mm-hmm. They're the only ones that do it that way. Mm-hmm. So technically, they are really family. It's not as if it's like the Liberals in BC are radically different from the Liberals out in, I don't know, Nova Scotia, let's say. Pick a province.
Mm-hmm. Well, theoretically.
Yeah. But there's a decisive difference between, you know, those sets of Liberals as opposed to the NDP are all supposed to be one big happy family. As to whether the backing from the Greens and the confidence agreement that they have is making the BC government slightly different. I don't think it's just that. I think BC...
Well, I think they ran on anti-pipeline.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. But that's the difference. And then you'll get across the mountains a bit. The difference with BC is how ingrained the environmentalism is. That's not to say that it doesn't exist in Alberta, but it's a different approach. And it's kind of weird in a way to see this. And then the old school kind of, you know, what was it? Wine was one of the things, but there was something else where they were like doing the shutdown on.
I don't know. I just read about the wine.
There was wine. There was like two or three things like, well, if you do this, we're going to do like tit for tat kind of stuff. Right.
Yeah. I know there was a guy who in Fort McMurray who got like way ahead of the wine embargo who was like,
I'm never buying
there. Never doing BC wine till they get our oil.
It's like when the Russians did something, people were dumping the vodka out in the streets. Like, we're never going to drink this again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
They were doing
ago.
That with like wine from France, too. And then there was the whole Keurig coffee maker thing.
Freedom fries. Oh, yeah.
Freedom fries.
Curry.
There's a proud tradition of boycotts. political boycotts.
So it's really easy to push that button and get people revved up.
Yeah.
I noticed that Jason Kenney's been a little bit quiet. I haven't really heard anything on that front. Because he can't really say that Notley isn't standing up for Alberta when she's going like full bore on this one. Like, you know, this pipeline is going to get built. The other factor is, too, and I'm not sure if people can appreciate this fully, is that pipeline is federal jurisdiction.
Yeah.
As far as Trudeau's concerned, Trudeau Liberals are concerned, this is going through. Notley's like, this is going through. And I think all that the Horgan Liberals can do. Horgan Liberal. Okay, start again. The NDP can do it in, NDP Greens can do in BC is just chuck as many wrenches at this as possible. It's like, well, we're going to have maybe they figure they can get it studied to death. You know, it's like, okay, well, if we had to do this environmental study, we do this over here, here, and here, they'll just get fed up. There's already been a ton of cash dumped into this already. I guess it's supposed to provide the promises, big money of $20 billion. And of course, increase the supply of Canadian oil. I think oil is generally sold at a loss now because the capacity is low. There's like your economics lesson.
Yeah.
There's not enough flow, so it has to be sold at kind of a cut rate.
Right.
I think what they're looking for here is to increase the amount of flow, and then everybody's making money. Just a direct pipeline to China, because they will buy every single fluid ounce that can come out of the ground. So this is the question. Dilbit. It was the Dilbit spill.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things the BC government has thrown at this is like, well, can you actually clean this crap up? It's not like a regular oil spill. It's a different material altogether. So that's one of the things they're going after, among others. So, and First Nations as well. Every environmentalist, the environmentalists that were screaming at Trudeau pretty much. Oh, come on! Come on, you saw it, right? Come on.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. You're not going to respect these people? Get out. Like, Trudeau lost his cool with them. And this is that was a direct result of people.
He's been known. He's lost his cool before, so they should watch his elbow.
No. But come elbow you if you're going to keep this up.
You know what? It's, you know, we joke about Trudeau, but I mean, Harper would never go somewhere where people might scream at him. So
no. I guess that's the, these are supposed to be like open meetings, but.
I mean, we want to mock Trudeau for like people kind and having protesters thrown out, but you know.
Or saying CFIU.
I've been to, yeah.
but anyway.
But
I just kind of blew the inside joke there.
But he's, you know, at least, you know, being out there and, you know, having been to a couple of Stephen Harper events myself and knowing, like, the hoops you have to jump through if you're just, like, not corporate media covering it, you know.
Mugshots.
It's so hard to... it's so hard. I mean, and I've done media events where Trudeau's appeared at and... this is getting off on a tangent, but I've done like he's been at Linamar a couple of times, and you know the most security you go through is like when the RCMP just check the bags and.
Linamar's are BFFs in town, aren't they? I don't know if it's because Linda Hasselbrotz is on the NAFTA panel. Like, there's the link there. You're talking about the Mulroney link in CTV. There's definitely a liberal. Linamar
oh, for
link,
sure,
in
it's...
my opinion.
Well,
that's me covering my butt by saying, in my opinion, it's a podcast. We can say whatever. We could even swear if we wanted to.
We could.
It's just not our style, unless it's by accident late at night.
Well, you're right.
Yes.
That's the voice of experience talking. Back
Please
to oil.
In advance.
Back to oil. I mean, it's they're right to be concerned, though. And the because there is a, you know, we talked about this about the wind spill a couple of weeks ago, but, you know, there's a big, wide, huge history of oil spills, and including, like, these modern pipelines. Even after, like, promises about no spills, no worries. But the spills happen regardless. And, of course, they're concerned about sensitive environmental areas. I think the number I read that the pipeline goes over 500 different streams in the Fraser Valley.
And that's right where it will break. Right there. Right?
Oh, for sure.
And just shoot right in the
street. And then, it goes into port where it's like a sensitive area for sea life, including endangered orcas who, and it's not just like the possibility of an oil spill, but it's all these heavy oil tankers that are going in and out of port that could end up being of harm to the whale population. And of course, you know, that's not just like tree hugger hippie talk. I mean, that is key to tourism. How many tour boats go out every day to see killer whales in their natural habitat? And I mean, it's what's driving a lot of the states in the United States who Trump has opened up offshore oil drilling to go like, slow down. Because, some of these in warmer
Gulf
waters, are, the water. The water life is connected to tourism, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one MPP called it Russian roulette with a coastline.
Mm.
And as you said, all of the rivers and streams. It was power. I was saying there was a couple of things, the wine boycott. There were discussions going on about Alberta buying some power from BC, and I think Alberta just shut her down. They said, no, we're not going to talk about that anymore. So that would be a significant chunk as well. So.
The other thing about this, though, that no one's talking about is, like, the scramble. And you mentioned it, that they need to get production up in order to make it viable again and make more money.
Mm-hmm.
Because Alberta's legitimately been hurting for a while. But this all comes back to the fact that Alberta in the past has not managed their oil wealth very well. They're desperate to get those drills going again, get those pipelines built because they can – only really function in the boom time because nobody plans for the downtime. And the slump, I think, this time has been perhaps a bit more significant than in the past because, of course, when the last great boom period, they were cut.
Mm.
But, this also has a lot to do with Alberta's complete lack of long-term planning. And if... the Notley government, to their credit, has made a lot of strides in terms of, carbon tax and more environmental regulation and all that, but they are still boosters of the oil industry because that is the industry in Alberta. And if even getting everything to go the way they want it to go, they still have to confront the fact that whether or not that in the next boom, and there will probably be another boom, what are they going to do? Are they going to spend like drunken sailors again, where everybody gets like a check for $1,000 in the mail? Or are they going to actually put some away for the rainy day when the rain comes?
Yeah, that's the thing. Are they going to do it Norway style? And if I understand it right, the Norwegian program, which has made everyone there wealthy, and I don't know about everything being taken care of, but a lot of their social services and basic things that we have trouble funding here, like transit, is covered by oil wealth. And supposedly that program was inspired many, many years ago by the one that existed in Alberta and was just neglected, because it's like, I believe here at least that, you know, corporations have too much of a say and control. It's like, we don't want to put this percentage into it. Had they done that, even if it was a really, I think it's a really low percentage right now, if they'd have bumped it up.
It's just pathetically low.
Just a bit. I mean, there'd be millions and millions of dollars for infrastructure, all the stuff. As to whether the NDP are going to go in that direction, which I believe that they are, but it remains to be seen as to whether this is going to be built. Like, as far as I understand it, this is like 3 years off at this point, or 2020. It's 2018. Yeah. So 2 years off at least.
Yeah.
Plus all the approvals, plus all the other paperwork and hoops to jump through. And I'm not sure. I think the restrictions or the hopes that BC had on were, it was initially 5 under Christy Clark. I think that number is up to 37. It's like, if you fulfill this criteria, you can put the pipeline through. And then, as we said, of course, there the here come the wrenches to throw in.
And there are 150 conditions from the feds too.
So. But then the feds can just, you know, the feds can, you know, supersede all of this stuff and say, look, it's going here. You're doing it now. I don't know if it'll be like Dakota Access or whatever with that kind of scene. The potential is there, I guess, for that to happen. But I can't see it. But you never know.
Well, I mean, I think people are riled up, and I think that I think people in BC, with the NDP and the Greens sort of in power, I think they might feel empowered, and we could be heading in the direction of like a really awful-looking protest similar to the North Dakota Access. I can't remember the
Dakota
exact
Access,
name.
Yeah.
Dakota Access Pipeline, that's right.
Yeah.
It could happen.
Sure.
And I think the thing about the Prime Minister, his town hall approved, people are riled up, and you know, and now it's become a game of political payback. It's like, oh, you're not going to let our oil through? We're not going to buy your wine. Suck it, BC whiners. And
it's like, what's next? Right?
But, you know, it's also, you're talking about Kenny not speaking up because you think Kenny would be like, hell yeah, on the sideline, even if he can't say it, because that would look like defending Rachel Notley, and he can't be seen doing that. But there are people in Alberta who are saying like, hey, you're going to hurt our restaurants where we get like 25% of our, you know, our wine list from BC wineries. You're hurting small business in BC because a lot of those wineries are small businesses, family-owned businesses. So even that doesn't look good. And then on top of it all, you have what's-his-face in Manitoba, Pallister, coming out and saying like, hey, we're supposed to be trying to work on this like inter-province free trade stuff.
Did he make that call from Costa Rica or wherever he hangs out?
I'm not sure where he made the call from. I just read it on the CBC page. But you know, he's trying to be an honest broker and say like, you know what, let's take it down a notch, because this could, you know, this might have serious effects on that. Because if, you know, Quebec does something, Ontario doesn't like, maybe we withhold something or they withhold something. You know, it's starting a kind of a
cross-provincial trade war of sorts.
Right. So, I mean, and then at the same time, the trick is, I think, you know, how are they going to resolve this? Because the NDP seems pretty intractable. Rachel Notley, I think, thinks rightly that her reelection is going to be based on whether or not oil production gets going again.
Most definitely.
So how do these two things resolve themselves? And then you have like Trudeau, who and the feds in Ottawa are like, well, we kind of like approve this, guys. Like, can't we all just get along? And they kind of want to be outside of the bitter battle. And I've been thinking like this week, can you imagine if Tom Mulcair had been, he was prime minister right now and having to deal with this mess?
Oh, yeah.
That would take this from like political infighting. That would take this from like 10 into 20, because, you know, you'd have two NDP governments looking to a federal NDP government trying to be the ultimate arbiter, and somebody was going to get pissed off. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't wish that decision on my worst enemy.
And of course, there's always the possibility in BC, it seems to be holding for now, but the supply and confidence agreement could fall apart. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be, you know, the NDP sort of piss off the Greens to some degree. They seem to be doing a good job right now in terms of keeping them. They have to keep them. They need them or they cannot be the government. So
yeah,
whether that's teetering yet, it's hard to say, but it is a possibility that the government there could fall and then an election may rewrite everything. Or maybe not. Might be a stronger NDP victory if it happens again. So all speculative stuff, but these are all possible things.
Yeah, it's not an easy answer, and I'll be interested to keep an eye on this to see, you know, if it can be resolved in some way.
Just quickly, speaking of Greens, yes. were some of the BC ones at the convention here in Ontario on the weekend?
One of them, I can't remember which one, appeared via Skype. The main visiting guests were Peter Baker and Hannah Bell from PEI.
Ah, right.
They were there.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Greens everywhere now.
It's a little bit like that. Right. Peter Baker was, of course, oddly enough, late because of the weather. It was like there was that really, I don't think it was a bad blizzard, but it was a significant enough blizzard that, you know, plane travel was kind of messed up. And
one de-icer down there.
Yeah.
Zane Stan, he's got a little brush. So.
I thought you were serious. Like,
oh, no.
He's my man. His name is Stan.
Yeah. I had been to Charlottetown Airport, though, years ago. It was like, wow.
But yeah, he was running a bit late, but they were the main guests. And I mean, to maybe bring this full circle, that's, I think, one of the things that's driving, one of the messages that came out of that Green convention here last weekend was that it is happening. It happened in Iceland. It happened on both sides of the Canada coast, PEI, BC. We have an opportunity here. People are kind of getting sick of the old ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe there's an opportunity here. So, yeah.
It's going to be a hot one in June.
Oh.
Not just temperature-wise.
I was going to say, it's usually a hot one in June.
forward to it, though. It's going to be the battle for Guelph will be an interesting one.
It'll be intense, and we're going to have... Well, when we get closer to election time, when the writ drops, we'll have everybody on for sure, and I've started kind of working on that discreetly.
So discreet, it's now on the internet.
I know. I wanted to...
You know what I heard? Adam's working on a thing.
I want to do a shout-out for Rebel Knowledge, which happens this weekend at the University of Guelph. Brad Evoy from OPERG was our co-host last week. And check that out on the weekend if you want to get some Rebel Knowledge and see what the activist community is up to. Check it out. It's here at the University of Guelph. And check us out next week. We'll be back on the radio at our usual time on CFRU. And we'll hopefully we'll be lining up some guests coming up even before the election, hopefully. And you can stay connected to us at opensourcesguelph.com, opensourcesnewswire at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And we also have that Facebook page, as I said, Open Sources Newswire. That's the Facebook page. I got confused there for a second. Maybe
so many pages.
Should we edit this?
And so many things.
Keep it in. Okay. you can listen to past episodes of the show on this same podcast channel on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, the Guelph Politicast channel. You can hear other great content there as well. I am on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, and you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at the Spanner Book, spannerbook.wordpress.com. And there's a fresh thing there. So there's a fresh thing, something fresh, 50% fresh.
Hot off the press.
Somewhat hottish off the press.
Somewhat hottish. Okay, cool.
It's lukewarm now. It's been a few days.
I was about to say DJ Sounds Good to Me. Actually, well, she might be next. If you might go over and tune on to somewhere. CFRU, she will be next. I don't believe Stacey is preempted, but you can go to CFRU now and listen to DJ Sounds Good to Me now that our show is over, but we will be back on CFRU next Thursday at 5 p.m. And we will... I got to get the music queued up. Stand by. Getting it queued up. See you then.